This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
And now some of your Eco Radio KC headlines. The city of Mumbai has banned plastic bags and bottles. The Indian city will fine or jail residents caught using single-use plastics. Mumbai has become the largest Indian city to ban single-use plastics, with residents caught using plastic bags, cups, or bottles to face penalties of up to 25,000 rupees and 3 months in jail. And NPR News is reporting that a Canadian mining firm says it will move forward with plans to mine minerals from land that was previously part of the Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument in Utah. Last December, President Trump removed nearly half of the Grand Staircase Escalante from protection, as well as part of the Bears Ears National Monument, which is also in Utah. The move was the largest reversal of national monument protections in U.S. history. Glacier Lake Resources, a Vancouver-based copper and silver mining firm, says that it has acquired the Colt Mesa deposit, an approximately 200-acre parcel of land located about 35 miles southeast of Boulder, Utah. Because it was nationally protected, the area was previously off limits to development and mining. In a press release, the company noted that the deposit recently became open for staking and exploration after a 21-year moratorium. And that's about all the headlines we have tonight. Mike Murphy here. Richard Mabian is here in the studio also. And we've got Bill Nichols on the phone. Can you hear us, Bill?
I can hear you, Mike.
Great. So Bill's with the Save the Last KC Forest. Is that what your organization is called?
Yeah, that's one of the ways we're called. Our petition is actually Preserve the Line Creek Forest, and that's out on change.org. But that's the Save the Last KC Forest or Save the Last Forest. That's kind of like shorthand for that.
So before we, I guess the first thing is we should lay out for our listeners where exactly this forest is.
Good point. So the Line Creek Forest is in Kansas City North. It's in Platt County. If that's starting to hone you in, it's east of I-29. It's west of Missouri 169. It's bordered on the north by Berry Road. It's bordered on the south by 68th Street. On the west by Green Hills Road, and on the east by Coventry and North Platte Purchase Drive. If that hasn't honed you in even further, the beautiful Line Creek Trail goes right through the middle of the through the forest, and meanders through the forest.
And
can you place it?
Kinda, yeah. So, but until I started hearing about what you, the efforts of you folks, I had no idea, I guess, that this was even, that size forest was even there.
No, that's right. And it's been there for a long, long time. Development has just kind of grown up all the way around it, and somehow it has remained untouched, fairly untouched all of these years. It's fascinating to go back and look at the 1958 and the 1965 USDA aerial photographs and compare them to current photographs. And it's essentially the same forest, you know, just 60 years older. And in the places where there were some maybe farming or fields, the forest is actually reclaiming those fields and regenerating itself.
Wow. So, is this might be classified to some extent as an old growth forest?
You know, there's been a lot of debate about that, and I think you probably have to take forestry classes to get to the truth of it. But you know, the Missouri Department of Conservation has categorized it, and they call it approximately 800 acres of mostly undeveloped land, and that the acreage is forested. It is not compromised by heavy infestation of invasive species. And they say that several species of oaks and hickories, some quite old, can be found in the more upland parts of the area. They think that this is an important piece of property for conservation. And among other benefits, they think that this contiguous green space offers like valuable wildlife habitat, improved water quality, and outdoor recreation. And so that is part of the debate a little bit. I mean, there are upland forest trees, and then there are bottomland forest trees, and then there are some woodland trees and areas. And the woodland areas being those areas with less tree canopy than the forested areas.
Okay. What's changed? This was relatively pristine forest. Just 300 acres isn't tremendous, but for an urban forest, it's quite sizable. It's been remained relatively untouched all these years, and now what's going on?
Well, and let me correct you if I can.
Yes.
It's about 800 acres.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. And so what's going on and what prompted our petition, actually the goal of our petition, our Preserve the Lion Creek Forest petition, is to preserve the Lion Creek Forest as a Missouri State Conservation Area. And so we started this petition just under 9 months ago, and we now have about 11,330 signatures and about 875 Facebook followers. And so, Mike, one thing that we see in the comments by the petition signers is that there are overriding themes, and that one theme is a very personal connection and history and love for the Lion Creek Forest and the trail. Another theme is a desire to keep the forest natural and as a sanctuary. Another one is to protect nature now and for the future, for ourselves and for our children. And then the last one is really an extreme dissatisfaction with the current state of like unchecked overdevelopment and for the blighted areas that are being allowed to fall into disrepair.
Mm-hmm.
So the main issues of our petition is to engage with the Park Hill School District, to advocate that it builds its facilities in an environmentally friendly manner with the smallest possible footprint and impact on the forest, and also for them to preserve or conserve all or a portion of the extra 191 acres that lay in the forest, that they don't currently have plans for. And so another issue in our petition is to have the City of Kansas City, Missouri erase the $25 million Lion Creek Parkway from its planning maps, and then also to manage the 75 acres that it owns in the last 4 years forest area in a manner that would be conducive to a state conservation area. And then the final issue or in our petition is to get connection between two private landowners with the Missouri Department of Conservation so that they can discuss and identify ways their land would become part of the conservation area. So what's going on now is that one of the four major landowners, the Park Hill School District, they bought approximately 272 acres in April of 2017. They've made plans for their acreage, and those plans involve basically building three schools, and they want to build the Hopewell Elementary School, which is basically underway right now. They want to build a LEED, L-E-A-D, Innovative High School. And then thirdly, they want to build a full-on high school up there with a road that would connect through the forest to the elementary school and the LEED school. So since October of 2017, we've been interacting with Park Hill, and you know, once again, please build your facilities in an environmentally friendly manner, smallest possible footprint. So we've been going pretty frequently, attending and speaking at board meetings. We've been sending letters and emails. We've been meeting with school district administrators. we've been doing our own research and then giving that research to the school district, and we're having informational hikes in the forest, and we've been urging the community to voice their concerns too. So that's of the three issues that are going on there, the most current and urgent, because Park Hill right now is going forward with their elementary school, the Hopewell Elementary, and if anybody drives by 68th and Wacomas, you're going to see that. And right now they're in the design phase for the LEED Innovative High School, which is going to be farther north into the forest and would require cutting a road through the forest to get to that facility. And that is kind of, that LEED Innovative High School is kind of the gateway building, because at some point in the future they also have drawn on their plans a massive third high school for the Park Hill District with parking lots and ball diamonds and performing arts and just a whole bunch, you know, I mean, just a full-on development. Somewhat less than a school district, but more like a commercial industrial development. So that's kind of what's changed, and that's what's current and urgent right now.
Yeah, Bill, this is Richard Mapien, and it's very nice to meet you, my man. I'm sitting here listening to you, and first of all, I want to get some information on you. What got you involved in this interest that you have about saving that forest?
Okay, well, Richard, I had a Powerball dream, and whenever I would have a lousy day at work and I had a Powerball, this was the property that I dreamt about, and that I would buy up this property. And because I had actually contacted the Missouri Department of Conservation back in the 1980s about, you know, what a great piece of property this would be for conservation, in my Powerball dream, I bought it all up. And you guys probably don't know it, but there's actually a dry 12-acre lake that's sitting right there that, in my Powerball dream, I could repair that dam, let the lake fill. There is an old interurban railroad line roadbed that goes through there that would make a great path. So once I spent all this money of my Powerball money, then eventually I was going to turn it over to the Missouri Department of Conservation and let them have it. So it was back in October when something flashed across my Facebook page about this petition that this woman named Julie Studerheim had started. And once I started reading the petition and understood that it was in my Powerball property, I kind of had to start thinking about things and kind of mulled on it long and hard, because, you know, here I'm losing my Powerball dream, but my ultimate goal was to preserve the Lion Creek Forest.
You know, I'm very impressed with you. You remind me of the folks out in Tonganoxie who took on Tyson. Those were just regular people. You know, we spend our time and we interview a lot of environmentalists and environmental-minded people, but it's really refreshing to start seeing regular people who are starting to take the stewardship of the land seriously and speaking up. I think I know the section of town you're talking about. I used to have to get from Doubletree Hotel with a friend of mine that worked over there, and they lived, and it took one of them 60 number street, 64, 60 something, and cut all the way over to, go almost all the way over to, what's that street over there in North Kansas City? Oh man, what's the main street that the
North Oak?
Yes, we go over to North Oak. What is that street that goes straight through there?
I bet you were on 68th Street.
Yeah, and you mentioned 68, didn't you?
I did.
Okay, so you're narrowing down my vision of where you're located. If I'm not mistaken, up in that portion of that section of the town, did they at one time have a private ownership thing up in there, property?
Well, there's a couple couple businesses or entities that do own the property up there. Now, are you thinking about the old Drennan Lake fishing lake?
I don't know. It was a pond out there. It was a lake. I just know they had restriction on who was living there. I heard about that. But so I'm kind of visualizing what part of town you're in. I think that's amazing that place is there. I'm a 60s guy, man. 70s, you know, Easy Rider type person. And back then we used to listen to Whole Earth catalog. I think you had those, and I'm trying to think of the name of the group that had that played this music, and in the music in the background they'd be saying civilization. Oh, and when you're talking, I'm seeing that in what you're talking about. I'm seeing civilization trying to take over your little piece of the earth out there.
Well,
and you can hear it in your voice. Yeah, you can hear it in your voice. These are these other people. I know you said the lady started the petition. I'm just getting some understanding of what we're dealing with here. This other lady started the petition. Have you met her?
Oh yes, many many times.
So where's she coming from? How did she get engaged in that?
Well, you know, she moved into the neighborhood, and then she started hearing plans about the Park Hill School District doing this construction and development. And she will profess to be a city girl, but she loves the environment.
Okay.
And her house is very near to the forest, and it just rang to her, you know. Something chimed with her, and that she stood up. And after she stood up, I stepped up too, because she had stepped forward.
Okay. But didn't you say you got something like 11,000 signatures?
Yes.
God, that's great, man. I'm real proud of you all out there, man. That's very good work, fella. Very good work.
Well, you know, like someone said, let's see, we were warned, we were given an explanation, yet we persist. That sound like something you heard recently?
Yes, it sounds. Yeah. So I wanted to ask. So there's some concerns about what the school district itself is doing in the community there, and one of the things that I read on the Facebook page, and you and I talked about this earlier today, so they clear cut part of this forest to build. And then in order to dispose of what they cut down, they burned it. And not only that, but they burned it on ozone alert days.
You're absolutely right, Mike. And that generated two KCMO 311, you know, reports. And I guess when the air quality folks went out there to talk to the project manager, he admitted he was unaware of the ozone do's and don'ts. He didn't even know where he could go to find out the information.
Wow.
And evidently what he explained to them was that they end every day by covering their burn pit with a few layers of dirt, and then they remove those layers prior to starting up the fire the next day. That's really been kind of gut-wrenching. I mean, there have been people that have approached the contractors and said, you know, hey, look, we'd like to recycle this wood, or we'd even like to get firewood, mm-hmm. you know, from this wood.
Right.
And they've been turned away for various reasons.
But don't you have to have a burn permit?
Yeah, and I think they do have a burn permit, but doing it on an ozone day wasn't in the permit.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, the reason I was saying that because it brings up another area of concern, especially for these environmental folks we're talking about, because you would think that if the permit has to come from some government body, that they know those permits are out there, and when you know you have an ozone day, that those would be the people you would somehow reach out to say, hey, I'm just saying that's a failure
that
there.
That should be included in the permit process.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. I think you're exactly right. Bill, we're going to ask you to hang on. We're going to go to take our first break, so just hang on, and we'll be back with you in just a quick while, okay?
Sounds good.
All right. You're listening to Eco Radio KC here on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
We're killing our plants and animals. Animals consider eating anything. All that trash can't be digested, causing death. This also goes for our plants. Piles of trash are ruining and killing them. In some animals that decompose, you would see all the trash that it consumed. The most we can do is educate people by having public speakers go to schools to educate on the topic and having litter laws where it's needed. With no litter, we would have a beautiful environment and live in healthy conditions. This is brought to you by J.C. Harmon High School and 90.1 FM KKFI.
All right, this is Richard Mabian, and if you want to join this conversation, come on and give us a call. Don't wait until the last minute to do so. 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. With its wide-open, shallow waters and pristine views, North Carolina's Pamlico Sound is a haven for people who love the shore. But humans are not the only ones enjoying this part of the Outer Banks. As the world warms and water temperatures rise, bull sharks are starting to use Pamlico Sound as a nursery.
Rather than just kind of wandering in, chasing schools of fish or foraging in the sound, it now seems that they're actually reproducing inside the sound as well.
Charles Bangley of the Smithsonian Environmental Research Center says that as a result, young sharks are seen much more often than they were before.
They went from being extremely rare in the system as juveniles to being something that in certain parts of Pamlico Sound you can almost dependably run into.
That might sound menacing, but Bangley says the young sharks are unlikely to pose a risk to humans.
The only negative interaction you might have with them is they might bite a fish that you're fighting off your hook or something while you're out there fishing. Plus, it's kind of neat to be out there and just see little baby sharks swimming along. At this size, they're actually pretty cute.
But these juvenile sharks could outcompete other species for food. So cute or not, they symbolize the danger that warming water poses to ocean ecosystems. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
And we're back here in the studio. Mike Murphy here with Richard Mabian, and we've got Bill Nichols on the phone. And we're talking about the Lion Creek Forest is the name. So, Bill, up until a couple years ago, this was privately owned by one entity before it started selling off to the school district, et cetera.
Right. The land that the Park Hill bought was owned by one entity. There are basically four major landowners in the Lion Creek Forest, and one is the Park Hill District now with approximately 272 acres. The two private landowners up to the north have between them about 415 acres, but the other landowner is actually the city of Kansas City, Missouri. And they've got like 75 acres spread out over several parcels that run up and down the Lion Creek Trail, most of their land falling into the floodplain along Lion Creek. And so you had asked me about, you know, what the current issue with Park Hill is. There's another current issue, and that is that Kansas City, Missouri, back in 1972, drew a conceptual Lion Creek Parkway on the map, right? I think at the time there was maybe 9,000 people in Platte County, Missouri. Mm-hmm. In 1976, Kansas City, Missouri adopted the Lion Creek Valley Area Plan and included the Lion Creek Parkway. And then when they updated in 2011, they still included the parkway. But that parkway was not included in any of the 24 potential capital projects, and it wasn't included on any of the projects that were slated for work after that April 2017 $800 million bond issue got passed. You guys remember that?
Mm-hmm.
So we've learned that the estimated cost of building that two-mile-long Lion Creek Parkway would be $25 million or more, because even back in 1976, Kansas City, Missouri engineers, you know, knew that the land, the topography in the Lion Creek Valley was very rough and steep and rocky. And then you've got a creek and a floodplain down at the bottom of it. There's very little in between. So, like I said, the second most pressing issue is that we reached out to Councilman Dan Fowler about the Lion Creek Parkway. And our concern was that that building the parkway would put a four-lane parkway with a 200-foot right-of-way right through the heart of the forest. And if you look at the maps, the parkway would parallel the Lion Creek Trail, which everyone enjoys, and even cross it at some point. And then, of course, once the parkway was built, subdivisions and development and everything else would sprout like mold, right? So on February 1st, KSHB Channel 41 reported that Councilman Fowler said that nothing was going to happen with the Lion Creek Parkway and that he was going to introduce a resolution that would get rid of the parkway plan altogether. And, of course, we thought that was great. By May, he flip-flopped.
Wow.
He said that that parkways preserve the existing tree canopy and that the parkway would protect the natural landscape from being annihilated as it becomes developed. He went on to consider himself a conservationist, working to protect trees and trails and parkways and green spaces, but that he was also a staunch advocate for responsible and environmentally advantageous development, and that he was seeing that that was happening by actively working to enforce strict building codes and zoning parameters. So that parkway is out there, and it's still on the map.
Okay.
And we still think that if it got built, it, you know, they would come.
Bill, you still captivate me, man, with your presence. And I want folks who are listening to the station to meet a real live you. Your background is you're very knowledgeable about what you're talking about. So there has to be somewhere along the line that you. I mean, when I heard you naming off the different kind of trees that were there, that impressed me right there. I mean, you got this down. So where were you born? Where did you grow up?
Oh, right here in Kansas City.
Okay.
And actually, I can claim to be a 54-year resident of Southern Platte County.
Okay. All right.
So this is home. This is my stomping ground. And like I said, you know, I was writing letters to the Missouri Department of Conservation back in 1988 because I was living right behind that forest and putting on a backpack and tromping around back in there to see what was there.
Well, you know, what gets me is that I love the fact that you call it a forest. And me, I grew up in Kansas City, Kansas, out in the Argentine district, and we were surrounded with trees, but we called it woods.
Yeah.
So what's the difference? I mean, how do you get forests over calling it woods?
Right. Once again, I'd probably have to have a degree in forestry.
You're doing pretty good, buddy. Don't you know what you're talking about?
But, you know, a forest is going to have dense canopy,
okay,
dense undergrowth or denser undergrowth, as opposed to, say, a woodland, which would have trees that were more spread out, not tree canopies, you know, the tops of the trees not interlocking with each other,
okay,
more space in between them, maybe less, you know, undergrowth, that sort of thing.
Well, and now that you mentioned that, I remember driving out 68th Street and seeing that landscape. I could see that in the distance, okay? And that was, it was a beautiful trip. I mean, I'll testify right now that I enjoyed it because of my open air background of growing up out in Argentina. You know, open space was something that we enjoyed. So riding through there was kind of like something that you wasn't used to running into in the Kansas City, Missouri area in a space like that. So you're talking about in between major development.
Absolutely. And Richard, I need to send you to our website, which is lastkckforest.com. We have drone video that we shot in November when the trees were at the height of their fall foliage.
Okay.
And it's gorgeous.
Yes.
And it's huge and it's massive. And I mean, it's nearly as far as you can see where that's the forest, right?
Right, right.
We do have a caller. You're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
My name is Valerie. I'm calling from Kansas City, Missouri.
All right.
I just walked in the radio. was on and I heard this. I didn't know prior what you guys talked about. This young man who has said that this is an area with trees and beautiful things that we should keep. You know, they're part of the environment. We must respect that.
That's right.
And here in this area, it's a lot of people knowledgeable just like him that live in cities where we need trees. And, you know, someone needs to stand up for that. I respect him.
Yes.
For having that knowledge.
Yeah.
Well, yes.
I agree with you. I agree with you. And that's why I told him that he needs to be heard. I mean, I want other people to hear. It's not like he's been to school for 30 years and all that. This is just a personal love for and stewardship. I mean, we had the theologist on here to talk about eco-theology, and I'll run into people now, and they talked about how much they learned about stewardship of the land, and that's what you're talking about, Bill, and I really appreciate you hearing you do that.
And I appreciate that, and I appreciate all the compliments. You should hear Julie Stutterheim. I mean, she's our petition starter and our main spokesperson. She's on a road trip right now with her daughters. Compared to her, I'm the junior varsity.
Yeah. But, Bill, I hear they call you the Lorax.
Well, I share that with Julie and the other members of our team for sure.
That's great. That's great. Well, Caller, thanks for your comment. We appreciate you checking in with us.
I got some.
Can I ask him a question, please?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
You know, I didn't never knew about that parkway, and I went on the map immediately and saw it. How long does it go? To Berry Road?
The trail or the parkway, ma'am?
Excuse me, please. The trail.
Oh, the trail. The trail is quite a jewel. We had a great parks director in Platte County. That trail goes all the way north of Berry Road, and then it goes all the way south, if you look at your map, to Riverside, and then it'll snake eventually all the way over to Parkville.
And that's where it stops?
Right now. I've heard there are plans to actually build that trail out on a levee. It would be west of Parkville and run it all the way up to Buchanan County.
Hmm. Right. Yes, that's very interesting. And Kansas City does have, like, the Lewis and Clark Trail there at 23rd and topping up in there. You know, just vast places that need to be preserved.
Right.
They really do. They're history. We must do this. And thank you so much.
Thank you.
For your efforts.
Thank you.
You.
Yeah, that was a nice call.
That was a good call. One thing I wanted to ask would be, our time is running short here, Bill, but I wanted to know what's next step, okay? You're getting your public notice about it through us right now, so what are you all planning next out there?
Sure. Well, we're going to keep pushing our issues, and so we're going to continue, and we ask for help to encourage the school district to design its facilities in such a way to conserve and preserve. We would like to see them develop a conservation plan for its acreage. We would like to see them design its LEED high school, and if there is going to be a future high school, so that those facilities don't cause like light or noise or smell or traffic or visual pollution in the forest. We would like for them to develop a conservation plan for the 191 acres that it currently has no plans for. We'd like for them to maybe even dedicate all or a portion of those 191 acres into a conservation easement. Additionally, you know, to plant native species instead of the non-native, you know, species that they intend to plant. As far as the city of Kansas City, you know, we will continue and would like help, you know, to impress upon the city that we want to preserve the forest as a whole and as an ecosystem, you know, not just a strip of trees and grass along another expensive parkway, and that, you know, this forest is unique and special, and we're tired of the attitude that every piece of ground needs to be paved or have a building put on it in order for it to be valuable. And like I think I mentioned that we'd reached out and we'd met with the Missouri Department of Conservation. They've been really supportive, and any encouragement to them on our behalf would be helpful. And recently, and if I can thank somebody, I want to thank the Thomas Hart Benton Group of the Missouri Sierra Club chapter. Kevin Grooms, their vice chairman, came to speak to the school board, gave a really powerful statement. And, you know, for our overall effort, we'd welcome, you know, the interest of any other local level or even state level conservation groups to help move this thing along. What else?
Well,
I think that's a lot.
Well, I just want to make sure, we've only got a couple minutes left, so I want to make sure people know about upcoming events. It looks like you have another one of these walks planned for Thursday.
We do, and we will be holding periodic informational hikes, but this one's going to be fun. We're calling it the Strawberry Moon Hike. In Native American lore, this was the moon where you would know it was time to pick your strawberries. Other places called it the Honey Mead Moon or the Honeymoon. And so we're going to get out there, I think, around 8 o'clock or so and do a little hike and try to catch it, get into the forest when it's dark, you know, and just experience it that way.
How cool.
Yeah, I'm very impressed.
And then also, I guess you folks have been attending school board meetings.
Oh, yeah.
And when's the next one of those?
I'm thinking that's going to be July 6th.
Okay, so
I would have to check their schedule. That is something, let me just say it again, if people would go to lastkcapitacatforest.com, there's a link to our petition, and then there's also a link to our Facebook page. And we are putting a lot of information and pictures and events out on our Facebook page. So that's a really good place to go to keep up to date on what's happening and to know what's coming up in the future.
I got one question for you, Bill, before we kick out of here. When you go to the school board meeting, what kind of pushback are you getting?
Well, that's interesting, Richard. We are allowed to speak during a public comment period. We're allowed 3 minutes each. And the school board does not interact with you.
Mm.
So you just sit there or stand there and say your piece, and there's no response back from the people you're speaking to.
Well, at least you're making it known, and I think that's a plus.
Yeah, we persist.
Yes.
Yeah, that sounds great. And again, we'll give out that website one more time.
Last KC, like Kansas City or Kappa Cat, forest.com.
All right. And thank you so much. And keep us posted on what's going on there, because I'm sure we'll have updates as this proceeds.
You know, and thank you so much for having us on. I mean, we all get a bunch of stuff, calls to action, bear's ears, national monuments, coal oceans, but this is local, guys. This is here.
Right.
This is Kansas City.
That's right. Nice meeting you, guy. Take care.
Nice meeting you.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
We'll be back in a couple of minutes. We're going to have someone on to talk about the public hearing about the Douglas County fracking wells. But first, we've got a couple of messages.
Hello, my name is Joseph Jackson, host of Cowtown Conversations, where we discuss matters that impact your life as a resident of Kansas City metropolitan area. Thursday mornings at 9 a.m., right after Democracy Now! Tune in for our next episode. Our guest will be the Kansas City Police Department, and we'll be talking about the dangers of celebratory gunfire. So join us on Cowtown Conversations, Thursday mornings at 9 a.m., right after Democracy Now!
KKFI is throwing a party June 30th at the Folly Theater. Two all-star bands backing up a lot of great artists, showcasing the diversity of our community. Doors at 7, shows at 8, tickets beginning at just $15. More info at kkfi.org/events.
The Golden Years of Water Advocacy on this current cast. A program in Milwaukee helps seniors become advocates for the city's rivers and Lake Michigan.
Some of them have time on their hands and are interested in learning more about issues and getting more involved as advocates for natural resources.
Dan Gray is with the Milwaukee Riverkeepers Senior Water Advocacy Network.
He says the group hosts workshops on topics such as hydraulic fracking and invasive species. It also organizes trips to places like water treatment plants, dam removal sites, and stream restoration projects. The idea is to equip seniors with a knowledge that will help them speak out on water-related issues. Current Cast is produced in partnership with Cornell University's Atkinson Center for a Sustainable Future. Learn more online at currentcast.org.
Okay, we're back again, and we have Jessica on the line. Jessica, oh. This is Richard Mabian. Are you there? If you're not, we are still working to pick you up.
So. I think you're there. Are you there, Jessica?
Yep.
Okay, all right, great. Got you. Hello, great. Jessica.
Hi.
All right. So Jessica, Richard Mabian's here in the studio with me, and we just had a few minutes. We wanted to ask you about what the public hearing tomorrow and what that's all about.
Okay. So there's two applications for injection wells in Douglas County. They're kind of in between Lawrence and Eudora.
Really quickly explain what injection wells are?
So the wastewater that is produced from extracting the oil and gas from hydraulic fracturing operations, I mean, for every 1 gallon of gas or, you know, like cubic foot of gas or 1 gallon of oil, it's basically a 10-to-1 ratio of water to oil. So there's a bunch, once they get the oil out, there's a bunch of chemicals left over, and all of that water that is now unpotable and basically unusable, and they inject that back into the earth in a different location than they extracted it, and then that chemical-laced wastewater sits in storage tanks underground for, you know, however long.
Is this going to be two separate hearings tomorrow, for one for each well, or how does that work?
They're combining them. They're both scheduled for 10. I mean, I don't know if they'll do one at 10 and one at 11. It's actually different. So there were so many, I mean, the public protest for these wells was huge, but the KCC is very good at being able to figure out ways to discourage citizens' participation. So basically, out of all of the 30, they call us Protestants or Protestants, all of us that were on the docket got booted off for one reason or another. They're really kind of starting to read their regulations in a way that discourages public participation even more. But there's two landowners around, like specifically with land, abutting up to the proposed injection wells that are still on the docket, and they are, you know, one of the things we as public want to do is support them because, you know, they have even more of a vested interest, I guess, than everyone else does for things not going in on their land.
So are you saying they're booting people off because they're not landowners, they're just there to make a public comment?
Right. So, okay. If you read the regulations, it doesn't say anything like you have to have land adjacent to the proper, you know, to the proposed injection well to be able to protest. But that's now that there's actually citizens saying, hey, we don't want this to happen in our state anymore, they're starting to, you know, read the regulations in a way they're like, well, we're going to say you have to have this type of, you know, vested interest in this happening to be able to participate in our quasi-judicial hearings. I mean, so it's a regulatory body of three decision makers. You know, they don't have any actual judicial training or anything like that, and then they make these decisions. And once they make the decision, so far there hasn't been anyone taking these guys to court, but that's actually something that's in the works for some wells in Franklin County. So that'll be really interesting to be able to get another governmental agency, you know, the courts,
right,
be involved with trying to get these guys under control.
So are you folks looking to get people out there to attend this hearing, or is it, do people?
Yeah. So we're, I mean, a lot of people, we're trying to get legislators, and we're trying to kind of, there have been people working, especially like Cindy Hodel. She's been working on getting legislators involved, being able to make this kind of a slightly hot button issue for the 2018 elections that are coming up in November. Citizen awareness so that people can campaign under these platforms And they're suggesting that legislators come tomorrow to be able to see, like, how one of these quote-unquote hearings works, see what public comment is like, so that they, as our representatives, can better navigate this for us and with us. Because, I mean, they're really shut out of this process as well. I mean, the legislative branch really doesn't have any say in this as of now. I mean, there have been some bills that some representatives, like Andy Cuthar, have tried to push through, but they just keep getting shut down and shot down. And but the more, you know, public support that we gather and the more representative support, then, you know, the more we can kind of fight this better. So, yeah, we're hoping that people can come tomorrow. It's at 10 o'clock in the morning. It's in Topeka. It's at the KCC offices. That's 1500 Southwest Arrowhead Road. But it's looking, I mean, I'm hoping that, like, maybe, you know, 30 people at least will show up, maybe more, and, you know, bringing signs and just showing that, showing the media, showing our representatives, showing others that we support each other and support the fact that, you know, we'd rather not have these three people making these decisions for our entire state.
Jessica, we did a show back a month or so ago with Robin Martinez, who's an attorney that's working with the folks up there in North Carolina, I mean, North Dakota's with the pipeline.
Uh-huh.
And something amazing came out of that conversation with him, and I'm just going to share that with you all, is the fact that someone who's passing up under the radar are the scientists who are developing these techniques that they're using to frack. That is a unbelievable. He talked about that process and what that involves, and that is a money-making thing for scientists. And we kind of let them slide by. We put all the pressure on the legislators and stuff, and we let them walk away clean. I just wanted to throw that out there to you all. Some people are making up them signs and stuff and making up those slogans that they're saying. That might be a group that we need to, y'all need to start pinpointing. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's true. I mean, a lot of this science that was done was actually kind of done a long time ago, and they were just implementing it. And, like, yeah, I guess those people that worked for the oil and gas industries in the really even 70s, 80s, and 90s figuring out all these weird ways to get chemicals, you know, oil out of rocks. And,
oh, what they're doing is unbelievable. When he was explaining it, I mean, it's a heck of a process. And that's why it becomes they're making money. Mm.
I mean, it's always about money, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
It is. And I think that the more and more that we touch on that or expose them, you know, that self-consciousness and guilt will have them standing over there in line with you eventually.
Yeah, Jessica, so could you maybe tell us where the, more specifically, where the two proposed sites are?
I mean, I could put it on. I mean, it's there's a map online. It's basically in between Lawrence and Eudora on, like, County Road 1901. I mean, that probably means nothing. So,
right.
But I mean, it's right near the Little Wakarusa Creek.
Sure.
It's right near Spring Creek. Like, they're basically both in between those two creeks. So there's definitely potential for ground and or surface water contamination from these. I mean, and that's not even the biggest issue. It's just the fact that over time these things will leak, and a lot of times gas kind of comes out of them. I mean, the hydrogen sulfide gas will come out, and that's one of the reasons, I guess, they're allowing, like, landowners to have standing still, is because landowners that do have property butting up to these injection wells do over time end up having, you know, grass that won't grow, crops that won't grow, health problems. I mean, we haven't really seen that much yet here in Kansas, likely just because of underreporting. But, I mean, other states,
right,
it's well documented, these kinds of health issues from largely hydrogen sulfide gas emissions over time. And it's almost like we'd rather just not get to that point here than having to, like, work backwards.
Well, you know, I didn't realize that those wells was that close to Lawrence, the area that you just named off, Eudora and Lawrence. I would think that we ought to be able to attract more attention coming out of Lawrence with some of those groups based to give you all some support. I do want to, again, give kudos to you and Cindy and all the group of you all that's working with that. There's such a thing now about just individuals becoming taking the responsibility to be stewards of the land. It's one thing to see it, but it's another thing to do it. So we're real proud of you all down there, and we want to make sure we keep up with you, okay?
Yeah.
Thanks. We all appreciate that because, yeah, we're having it can be disconcerting because we try and then nothing changes.
Right.
So.
Right. Well, maybe you're keeping things from getting worse.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
on that note, we're gonna have to let you go because we've got a few things to do. But thank you so much, and do
tell
stay
Cindy,
in touch.
Tell Cindy that Richard Mabian said hello too. I appreciate her.
All right, I will. I will. Thanks.
Bye bye.
Thanks so much.
All right, and thanks to the dog too.
Yeah.
Bye bye.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, really. All right, bye.
And now your calendar of events. There is a public hearing on the Douglas County, Kansas injection well permits. That's tomorrow from 10 to 1 at 1500 Southwest Arrowhead Road in Topeka, Kansas. Again, this is the Kansas Corporation Commission's hearings on proposed Douglas County injection wells on Hattle and Thrasher leases. And again, that's Tuesday, tomorrow at 10 a.m. at the KCC Topeka office, the main hearing room at 1500 Southwest Arrowhead Road, Topeka, Kansas. And Save the Last KC Forest is hosting a full strawberry moon walk at the Line Creek Trail of Platte Brook Trailhead. That's the Line Creek Trail in Kansas City, Missouri.
Can fracking make you fat? That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
The House of Representatives passed a farm bill last week by just 2 votes. While many objected to its work requirements for recipients of food assistance, others were critical for its effects on the environment.
According to the Natural Resources Defense Council, the bill repeals clean water safeguards and exempts companies that spray pesticides into waterways.
It also exempts chemical makers from enforcement when pesticides harm or kill endangered species, including some bees, and it prohibits local communities from adopting their own pesticide laws if they are more strict than federal standards.
Further, the House bill would exempt public lands from wildlife and water conservation safeguards, and EcoWatch reports that it would allow mining and logging in Alaskan forests.
A spokesperson for the Center for Biological Diversity said in a release that the act is a stunning gift to the pesticide industry with staggeringly harmful implications for wildlife.
The House bill now goes to the Senate, which may vote on it next week.
Wastewater from chemicals used in the fracking process might make a person fat.
That's the conclusion of Duke University researchers after they exposed cells from mice to the compounds from samples collected in Colorado and West Virginia. Scientist Chris Casadas said that even when wastewater samples were diluted 1,000 times, there was significant fat cell accumulation.
While the study does not say that fracking chemicals in waste cause obesity, the mouse cells that were submerged increased in size anywhere from 20 to 80%, depending on the chemical concentrations.
A spokesperson for the industry criticized the study, telling the Raleigh News and Observer that it used completely unrealistic concentrations and failed to identify how people would be exposed to the chemicals. The study was published in the journal Science of the Total Environment.
As reported earlier on This Week in Water, the White House and the EPA tried to suppress a report about dangerous compounds collectively known as PFAS that have been found in or near military bases across the U.S.
The government's efforts to keep its own report quiet were first revealed by Politico after it obtained emails, one saying the information could cause a public relations nightmare.
The report was finally released last week, and according to ProPublica, it upends the government's ideas of how much of the chemicals are safe. It finds that exposure should be limited for one of the compounds at levels 10 times lower than what the EPA had said was safe, and another 7 times lower.
The 852-page document describes how PFAS chemicals are associated with cancer, liver damage, decreased fertility, increased risk of asthma, and thyroid disease.
Harvard professor Elsie Sunderland said that scientists are just beginning to understand the effects of PFAS chemicals that have been used in products like carpets, frying pan coatings, and firefighting foams.
In other news about the EPA, the agency has approved the first-of-its-kind plan for the disposal of toxic coal ash to be administered by a state instead of the federal government.
EPA will now allow Oklahoma, Administrator Scott Pruitt's home state, to oversee the disposal of the toxic waste.
The ash is the product of burning coal and is laden with poisonous chemicals that can increase a person's risk for cancer and affect brain health. Contamination can spread through air and water.
Oklahoma's Department of Environmental Quality has regulated the coal ash up to this point, but always under federal rules. Now, according to outlet News OK, EPA will not be involved.
Lisa Evans, formerly with the EPA and now with Earth Justice, said that the decision means a bad situation will get a lot worse. Her group, along with the Environmental Integrity Project, issued a report last week that claimed coal ash pollutants are in Oklahoma's groundwater.
And a spokesperson for the Oklahoma Sierra Club said that this contamination happened right under the state's nose. Other states are seeking similar permission from the EPA.
It's like finding an alien environment on Earth. That's what a marine ecologist told National Geographic about the discovery of hydrothermal vents off the Azores.
The underwater hot springs were found 60 miles from the islands in the North Atlantic and are the first ever discovered vents in relatively shallow waters, only about 570 meters deep. Most vents are more remote and generally about 4 times lower in the oceans.
Scientists have found many species, up to 700, surviving in total darkness at vents and other locations. The vents release a chemical soup that would be toxic to humans and other creatures.
Temperatures around the vents can reach 650 degrees Fahrenheit and form when seawater seeps down into cracks and meets molten magma. It is likely that previously unknown species will be found at these new locations.
And finally this week, this sound. Annoying, right? Especially when you're trying to sleep. That's what Anurag Agarwal of University of Cambridge thought one night as he laid awake listening to an irritating drip from a leaky roof. And it got him to wondering, what exactly caused the sound and, more importantly, how to stop it?
Agarwal, like most of us, presumed the sound was the water hitting a surface. And although there's been a lot of research on physical mechanics of dripping water, no one had spent a lot of time looking into the sound it makes.
So we decided to investigate, and using high-speed cameras and an underwater microphone, he captured exactly how and when a drop of water plinks.
At the moment of impact, a drop makes no sound at all. But shortly after hitting the surface, the droplet forms a cavity that recoils and creates a small column of liquid.
That fast recoil creates a small water-trapped air bubble that causes the water surface itself to vibrate at the bottom of the cavity that then drives sound waves into the air.
So, okay, there's the science, but the researchers also offered a hack for what can be done about it, dish soap.
Adding a drop of dish soap stops the air bubble from becoming trapped by lowering the surface tension of the water. No bubble, no sound, no problem.
Agarwal said the knowledge gained in the research, in addition to preventing sleepless nights, could be applied in developing more accurate ways of measuring rainfall. Sweet dreams.
This Week in Water is supported by the American Water Works Association, highlighting the latest cost-effective strategies to manage aging infrastructure at the Water Infrastructure Conference and Expo, October 28th to 31st in Atlanta. Learn more at awwa.org/H2O InfoCon.
Thanks for listening to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.